What do you think?
I think we're dead meat. Real dead meat.
You're dead meat! Go ahead and laugh, you guys. If I ever find a little passes at business, you're dead meat.
Welcome to the Dead Meat Podcast, an extension of the YouTube channel Dead Meat. I'm James A. Janice.
I'm Chelsea Rebecca, and we're a boyfriend and girlfriend, and we like to get scared together.
Yeah, we do. Today, what are we doing today, Chelsea?
Today, we're reviewing Annabelle, released in 2014, I believe.
Yep, that's the year.
Yeah.
That's the year. Annabelle is a spinoff prequel to The Conjuring. Yes, The Conjuring, which came out the year before, right?
That sounds right.
2013? Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. I do have a cheat sheet on my screen. I also have a cheat sheet with my notes in hand. Got lots of notes on this movie. You're shaking your head.
I am. It's weird because at first, you know, I was getting ready to shoot this, and I was worried that I wouldn't have a lot to say about Annabelle, but no, I have a lot to say about Annabelle.
We have a lot to say about this movie. Especially because, so, we went into this. This is our first time seeing this movie. We just watched it. Its reputation precedes it as a bad movie. I've also heard that its sequel is really good. I haven't seen it yet. Neither of us have.
Yeah.
We've both seen the first Conjuring and enjoyed it. It's been a long time for me, though.
I really liked the first Conjuring.
Yeah.
We only saw it the one time.
I think in theaters.
Yes.
And so the details are kind of hazy for me because it's been 5 years now. God. Neither of us have seen the sequel, and you refuse to?
No, fuck that nun.
Because the nun?
She can go fuck herself. I don't want to see that movie.
So you're not going to see the nun when it comes out this year?
No, fuck that. I'm sure I'll see the second Conjuring eventually, mm-hmm. just because I like the first one so much, and I always like seeing Patrick Wilson doing stuff.
I like him.
But fuck that nun.
Yeah.
Fuck that nun.
So I guess this is part of the Conjuring cinematic universe. But it sounds like this movie is the worst of the bunch so far. And I believe it.
Yeah, it was not good.
This is not a good movie.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't hate it until the end.
Yeah. We're going to have a lot of things to say about that ending, I think.
That's the thing is that, like, for 30 minutes into this movie, I was like, wait, this isn't awful.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized it was 30 minutes into the movie and nothing had really happened.
So, just to put it in perspective, about an hour and 15 minutes into this, a character says, but wait, I don't understand the connection between the doll and everything that's been going on. And both me and James yelled, we don't either.
Yeah, there is no fucking reason for this doll to be in this movie.
No, it's why I had a suspicion that it was maybe we bought the rights to the script and put Annabelle in it, but I don't think it was.
I think it's just a weird script. It's written by Gary Dauberman, who also wrote all these Conjuring movies.
So weird. What happened?
I don't know, because he also co-wrote It.
Yeah.
Chapter 1 and is hard at work on Chapter 2, or maybe it's done. No, it's probably still working on it. Don't mess it up, Gary.
Yeah.
I mean, besides this, it looks like he's got a pretty good track record. I don't know what happened here.
Yeah.
I don't know. He, like, fell asleep writing this script, dude.
I just always blame the studio. If there's something that's a one-off terrible thing on someone's filmography.
I don't know, though. Because what studio would be like, yeah, make it more boring.
That's true.
This movie's...
More family drama.
This movie's fucking boring,
it
dude.
It is. Yeah.
And there's just no fucking reason for that doll.
There's none. There's absolutely no reason for there to be a doll.
I guess
there happens to be a doll.
Yeah. I guess we'll get into it. This movie also just lifts so many things from other movies.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about
that. And from real life events. I guess let's just fucking get into it, man.
Let's fucking go.
It starts with a title card about dolls. And about dolls.
Oh, dolls throughout history.
Mm-hmm.
People collect them and
kids love
like
them.
And demons use them.
Oh, shit.
For conduits into our realm.
One of the things in that set was not like the others.
Yeah.
Then there's an Annabelle. It seems like an Annabelle support group or something.
How did you end up with it?
It was a gift from my mom for my birthday. I don't know where she got it, but... We are beyond terrified.
I, you know what? I think that they're supposed to be talking to Ed and Lorraine Warren at the beginning of this.
We went back and rewatched this opening scene after the movie because it's used as a framing device and it's so fucking pointless. I think the only reason it's there is to be like, hey, Conjuring.
Yeah.
Ed and Lorraine.
I mean, they mention Ed and Lorraine. The priest mentions them.
Yeah, the priest
barely.
Is on his goddamn way to their house when he gets Annabelle.
Yeah.
And yeah, you don't need this.
I know.
You don't need this.
I know. That, you know what? That's a thing. Studio note.
That could be studio. I don't know.
Because
I mean,
think about how
this?
Easy it would have been to shoot those two beginning and end scenes and just plop them in there.
Yeah, because the beginning is these two girls who mentioned that they're nurses, they like to help people, and they're saying, like, this doll that they have is, like, messing with people. And, yeah, it's we assume they're talking to Ed and Lorraine.
Yeah.
And then it's, like, it's Annabelle, zooming on Annabelle, and then the movie starts. And then the last scene is a woman buying Annabelle from a pawn shop or whatever, saying, oh, my granddaughter's a nurse. She'll love this doll. So, cool.
Yeah, so the lady at the end gives Annabelle to one of the girls who's in this, like, therapy meeting with the Warrens at the beginning.
Nothing that happens in that opening scene informs the rest of the movie or is necessary to understand the rest of the movie or even like teases anything, because all they say is like, it started with little stuff, it would move by itself. Yeah, we fucking expect that going into this movie.
Yeah.
It's a movie about a haunted doll.
Yeah,
haunted, maybe, not really, possessed. Kinda.
We don't ever see that doll move by itself. We see it once.
We see it. Yeah, it levitates that one time.
But that's not even it moving by itself.
Fucking.
It's being lifted up.
There's no reason for that. It sits up. I think you were writing notes. It sat up before that and then levitated.
Whatever. I want to see this. I mean, I think I want this to be too much like a Chucky movie, but I want to see this thing running around.
Well, this movie.
Stabbing people's knees.
The director, John R. Leonetti, is a cinematographer by trade, and his first movie as cinematographer.
That's right.
Child's Play 3. And there's at least one reference in this because they wind up, are they living in that building?
I don't know if they're living in it. I think it's just a establishing shot of the city, but there's a building with a giant neon sign that says Barclay on it.
Yeah. And that's a reference to Andy Barclay of the Child's Play series.
Yep.
Great. Cool, but this isn't Child's Play. This is fucking Annabelle. The movie starts proper. Also, shit, that is one dirty fucking doll. She looks like a coal miner doll.
It's so gross.
It looks like she was down in the mines. Because what? Real Annabelle.
Real Annabelle is a Raggedy Ann doll.
Those are creepy too, though.
There's a real Annabelle. It's just a fucking doll that sits in a glass case. And the Warrens have it blessed twice a day.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
It's just that. It's just a fountain of money for the Warrens.
It is.
Are both Warrens alive?
Lorraine is alive.
Has Ed passed?
I'm
sure they speak together still all the time.
Oh, I know. I bet. I bet Ed is like a straight up poltergeist doing stuff. I would love to go visit their museum.
Yeah, I don't want to give them money, though.
I do,
these
I don't care.
These fucking charlatans.
She's old. It's
oh,
fine.
Oh, okay, so is Henry Kissinger.
Kissinger doesn't have a museum of haunted dolls.
He's got a museum of haunted something.
I know,
sure.
I was going to say, haunted conscience.
I'm sorry, Lorraine, I didn't mean to compare you to war criminal Henry Kissinger.
Yeah. It's Lorraine,
You're still a charlatan, though.
Yeah.
So we get to 1 year earlier, and we're in church with a... There's a shot of our heroes, John and Mia, and... Because we don't know what this movie's tone is yet watching this. So both of us thought that the weird look they were giving you.
I thought someone was getting hand stuff. We both did.
I thought there was hand
stuff
going on.
Their arms kind of moving around.
We thought opposite stuff.
Oh, yeah. I thought he was getting hand stuff. And
I thought she
was
getting
hand
stuff.
You know what? Could be both.
Sure. That's called Jack and Jilling.
Oh, is it? Is it really?
I think so.
I wonder if in a movie, so you know how something is rated R if you use fuck in like a sexual way?
Oh, yeah.
But you can say it a certain amount of times if you're like, fuck that, you know? Mm-hmm. D Do you think it changes a movie's rating if both people are giving and receiving hand stuff and it's not just one?
I feel like hand stuff is pretty just cut and dry.
Yeah.
Which is a horrible way to describe hand
say,
stuff.
That's, you don't want dry hand stuff.
No, but they're not doing hand stuff. They're just touching on her.
Oh, they're thumb wrestling.
Are they really?
Yeah, because he goes, "I won." Really
softly.
Oh,
that's cute. I thought they were just feeling on her pregnant belly.
No, they're
she's
thumb
super
wrestling.
Pregnant. Oh, that's cute. That's the thing. We can say right up top.
Yes.
Mia and John Form are great.
They're great. We love the main couple.
They are the saving grace of this movie.
Honestly, yes. If they weren't so likable, this would be an unwatchable film.
Yeah. Funnily enough, is funnily a word?
Yeah.
It always feels so weird when I say it. Mia is played by a woman named Annabelle Wallace, which is pretty funny. John is played by Ward Horton, who it looks like doesn't have a lot of credits to
you
his name.
You said he was a stuntman, right?
Wikipedia lists him as a stunt performer.
He's great in this.
He's very likable. They're both very likable.
I believe them as a couple. I think their chemistry is really good. It's something that is such a positive to this movie. Like I said, it would be genuinely unwatchable if they weren't so cute together.
But I do like how this is. Oh, so it's set in 1967. It's a period piece. It's the 60s. It's like
67.
That's what it says on Wikipedia. Because
they have the Manson murders happening.
I'm not a Manson.
I think they're a little too early.
I don't know. I'm not a Manson expert like you are.
I mean, whatever. Go ahead.
They have this like public persona that we see them put on when they're talking to their neighbors or other people. That's very, very proper, mm-hmm. very 60s, like Mad Men type. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, have to.
And yeah, then when keep up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
And then when they're together in person, it's cool because you can see them let that veneer be gone and they're much more real to each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's also such a relief to have a husband character who believes the wife.
That stood out to me as something I liked. The whole movie, are supportive of each other. They love each other. He doesn't belittle her. I liked their relationship.
It's a great relationship.
And I wrote down in my notes that, and this is before we even got to know him, really. Mm-hmm. So this is like the first 10 minutes. I was like, you know, he seems like a really nice husband. But
you
then
did.
Again, my standards for 1960s husbands in movies are very low.
Yeah.
But he's really good. He's like if you watch Mad Men, he's like a Ken Cosgrove. Like, you want to be married to Ken because he'll treat you right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kenny's a sweet boy.
Only John keeps both his eyes.
Oh.
Spoiler. Yeah, so they're great.
Yep. I like them. I hope they watch this. Someone email it to them.
Yeah, someone email Ward Horton.
That's a good name. That's a Mad Men name. Like,
for
you know,
real.
Yeah, Ward Horton.
Yeah, that's so that's the best part of this movie. Like we said, these two and their relationship.
Yep.
I will give credit to both. I mean, most of the credit to the actors because they're just so goddamn likable.
They do. Every actor in this does their best with the script, including the baby. This is good baby
you
acting.
You were very impressed.
I was very. Oh, that baby's really cute. So the main couple has a baby, and her name's Leon. She's so cute.
It's a good baby.
Yep.
After church, Mia and John talk to their neighbors, their next door neighbors, Sharon and Pete.
Okay, so this.
Well, here, I'll lead into it because they have their little neighborly 60s conversation, ha ha ha, and then they each go back to their houses. And then, so this is not a very subtle moment when they go to the house because they get home and John left the door unlocked. And Mia's like, "You can't do that anymore. The world
has
changed.
It's a different world.
It's a different world."
And I immediately said, yeah, it's Manson times.
Yeah.
Can't leave your door unlocked.
And it cuts straight to Manson murders on TV.
Yes, the Manson family is on TV.
So my immediate reaction to this was, well, this isn't subtle at all. But I gotta say, I'm comparing this to Mad Men, which is like the pinnacle of period pieces.
You can't compare this to Mad Men.
You can't compare a 90-minute movie
you
to seven seasons.
Anything to even costume and hair-wise, you can't.
That's the thing is, you said that these hairstyles look too modern. They look way too modern.
But you can't, baby. This doesn't have Matthew Weiner on it telling people to return apples back to the store because they're too big to be late 1960s apples because fruit wasn't that big.
That's a true thing.
That's a true thing. You don't have him on this movie. You can't do that to Annabelle.
I'm sorry, Annabelle. but just like the tone, the themes, I guess, of it's a changing world, which Mad Men explored because it takes place throughout the entire this decade of the 60s.
Oh my gosh.
I just want to watch
Mad Men. We can't start talking about Mad Men.
But
Mad Men is maybe our favorite show.
Yeah.
It's the best.
So immediately I'm like, well, this isn't subtle, but I'll forgive it that because it's a movie. It's got to get to the point. That's fine.
Yeah. Oh, also not subtle nod to the Mansons. Their next door neighbor's name is Sharon.
That's the thing, is it starts to get real. And
oh God. So the main character's name, if you didn't catch this, and I only picked up on it once the two main characters moved to a luxury apartment building.
With her baby. That's being chased by a demon devil.
The two main characters' names are Mia and John, after Mia Farrow and John Cassavetes, who were the leads in Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, this movie takes so much. Their neighbor's last name, Sharon and Pete, is Higgins. And Higgins, which I would just consider that a coincidence in any other movie, but with everything else that this movie is nodding to and lifting from, that's got to be Friday the 13th Part 3, Chrissy Higgins, Higgins Haven, it's a map on the game. I just am going to say, yes, that was intentional. But yeah, they mentioned that Sharon and Pete lost their daughter 2 years ago to hippies.
This movie does not have a very favorable view of 60s counterculture.
Because that daughter ends up coming back and murdering the neighbors.
So yeah, the neighbor's daughter named Annabelle?
It's Annabelle.
Yeah. Okay, the neighbor's daughter...
Annabelle Higgins.
Annabelle Higgins, who's a grown-ass lady.
She is. She's probably like what? Like 19,
yeah.
20?
Yeah, I mean, she's like a rough 19. Because she looks nasty.
Well, it's hard to tell under all that.
That commune lifestyle.
Yeah. You know what? We're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. I'm sorry, because we forgot. One, there's just a lot of exposition laid out when when John continuously says, I'm very stressed out at work.
You know I'm a doctor, honey.
I'm a doctor in residency, and I'm stressed at residency.
Yes, yes,
he
yes.
says this many times. But then he's like, there's something I want to give you.
That's right.
And she's like, last time you said that, I wound up pregnant.
Yeah. It's
that a fun
got
joke.
That got a chuckle.
Yeah. That's okay. And it's another thing that's like, oh, these two are fun.
I do like them a lot. I will keep reiterating that. They're very cute.
Mm-hmm.
But then so John comes in with this giant box.
It's a huge box.
Immediately all I could think of again was, oh my God, it's a fucking good guy doll.
Yeah.
It's like in every Chucky movie where it's like, you've got this in the mail, this 3 foot tall box.
Yeah. Only this is even bigger. It's like a great guy doll. It is
great.
Huge.
Yeah.
And it's Annabelle.
It's Annabelle.
It's Annabelle.
And
it's like a rare
Mia
thing.
Mia is psyched to get this doll. Oh
my God, John.
That's the one, right?
Where did you find her? I mean, do you know how long I've been looking?
I know.
I'd completely lost hope.
Yeah, and someone else says that later on.
The lady at the end buying it for the two nurses.
It's not explained.
No, I'm assuming, here's my guess. I think Annabelle looks like kind of an older style doll, like the dress she has on looks maybe...
Well, like 19th 40s. Century kind of?
Oh, no,
oh,
even,
okay.
You know, like a few decades earlier. So I wonder if it's just...
Give us a line.
Either a collector doll or maybe something that was like what she always wanted as a little girl. I wish we could know.
Yeah.
Because I don't know why you would want this doll.
Yeah,
it's
scary. It's a weird thing to say because I guess they're trying to justify why she would want this creepy fucking looking doll.
Yeah.
And so they say, oh, I've wanted this for so long. Give us a reason why you wanted it for so long.
I think the reason they give us is her whole... nursery where they're gonna keep the baby, where the baby's gonna sleep. The nursery where they're gonna have the baby has all these dolls everywhere. I think it's just she's a doll collector, and
so
that's that.
Fucking dolls,
man. I think everyone in their life knows. Every white person at least knows a older woman.
No,
who
I think
you
the
think
doll
it transcends
thing crosses
race?
Racial boundaries. I'm pretty
Let
sure.
Let us know actually
because I actually
please.
my ex has a black mom and a white dad. Pretty sure her mom collected dolls too.
Really?
My mom collected dolls.
My mom did not.
Lucky.
Yeah.
They're awful. The year I went to...
My mom collects Swarovski figurines. Those little crystal...
Oh, okay.
Little crystal swans.
The year I had to live with my mom after college while I saved up money to come out here, I just remember sleeping in a room with a bunch of dolls.
Yeah.
Didn't like it.
My friend's mom was the doll mom.
Oh, the doll mom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so she's a doll lady. She's got a bunch of dolls. Annabelle's now part of her dolls. And yeah, we can get back to the murder.
Okay.
The murder.
Yeah,
it's a very cool shot.
It is. Here's the thing. This is the tragedy of Annabelle. There's some good scares in this.
I would say.
And there's some cool things.
I would say there are some good scares. There are some, I might even call them great scares, but you could probably count them on one hand.
Yes.
Which sucks. Yeah.
But there's some really cool framing devices for scares. And these are scares that I always appreciate where... They're not necessarily jump scares.
They use
framing in such a cool way that the way that your eye is drawn to certain things on the screen is like what makes them scary.
Yeah.
Like there we see the thing, this demon, much later in the movie in the stairwell. And it's not even a jump scare, it just kind of cuts and this thing is in the stairwell. And we just hang on the shot of this creepy thing sitting there for a while. And that kind of just made my stomach drop.
Like this movie makes me want to do like a scare count series because I could name the five coolest scares and rank them from this movie. Because this murder one might be number two or three.
It's good.
I have my number one picked out.
Do you want to describe how?
Yeah. So we're in their room at night. They're sleeping, and the camera like pans from them sleeping.
Me and John.
John sleeping in bed and looks out the bedroom window, and you see through the window into the neighbor's house. This is through their window. And then, like, it's just this chill shot for a while. And then, oh, don't you see the wife?
The wife is in bed sleeping.
The neighbor's wife is in bed sleeping?
So you see, I think you see Sharon asleep. And then all of a sudden, I think a light flips on and the blood just, like, splashes across the wall.
Yeah.
And the wife sits up in bed and this dude just, like, kind of comes out of the hallway and, like, lunges at her. And I think the lights go off or something.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
It's a great shot. It's very good. It wakes them up, and they look out the window, and John runs next door to check what the hell is going on. And then she, like, goes over there, and he jumps out. He, like, busts out the door, and he's all bloody, and he tells her to get an ambulance, call an ambulance. It's another scare when he comes out the door.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it's this long tracking shot. It's like a one take
it is.
Of her going back inside.
That's
and
right,
calling
yeah.
the police. There's some cool stuff in this movie.
I know.
It's just that most of it is such a fucking snooze fest.
Yeah.
But this is a scary moment because while she's calling the police, we see that the Annabelle Higgins, cult daughter of the century, is in the background in her house.
Mm-hmm. She walks by, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's in the back. Yeah, she walks by in the background. And then it turns out that her boyfriend or just a cult dude is also there. And yep, they're in there. They're in the house and they chase after Mia.
Mia gets stabbed in the stomach.
In the pregnant belly.
By the cult guy.
Which is what happened in real life to Sharon Tate.
Yes.
Only she was actually murdered.
This whole thing, we were like, this is a very Sharon Tate-esque Manson murder kind of...
Here's the thing.
Homage.
The baby doesn't die.
No.
Thankfully. But because it doesn't die, why have this?
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. Maybe it's just because... It's finally seeing this kind of thing on screen, which I'm sure I've seen before. I mean, Game of Thrones. I've seen it on screen before. But especially since this is such a riff on the Manson murders, seeing it on screen and then thinking like, oh, this really happened to Sharon Tate.
Yeah.
It's so fucked
up. It's really upsetting.
It's upsetting.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not crucial to the plot, I don't know why.
I think it was in there just as kind of like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
And that's what it seems like. And that's why it feels kind of exploitive to me. Yeah. Like, it's like, hey, it's just like the Manson murders.
You know what? I just realized something. I even said, like, man, if they start writing stuff in blood on the walls, I'm done. And they do.
They do.
They do.
They do. That's after this very long, slow-mo sequence of me on the ground all damaged.
Yeah.
But yeah, the cops get there. They kill the guy, the cult, the Manson boy. They just shoot him.
Yeah.
But Manson girl has locked herself in a room.
AKA Annabelle.
Yeah.
Human Annabelle.
Human Annabelle has locked herself in a room.
In the doll room.
With doll Annabelle. She's holding doll Annabelle.
She's holding, I don't know why.
I guess doll Annabelle is not named Annabelle.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
She says, like, when she first walked in, she's like, I like your dolls.
Yeah, and she's holding that doll.
And then blood from human Annabelle.
Because she kills herself. I thought the cops maybe killed her. It turns out that they bust into the door.
I thought that John, like, bopped her with a vase or something.
From what I read, she slit her own throat. She murdered her. She suicided in that room and then used her blood to, like you said, write a symbol on the wall. Mm-hmm. We'll see that later. But we do see now some of her blood go into Annabelle the doll's eye.
Yep.
Okay.
And magic.
Okay, so here's what we have. Here's what we have. We have a porcelain doll.
It's going to get complicated.
And we have a grown-ass adult woman named Annabelle.
Yeah.
Who is a cultist who suicided and did some kind of blood magic and then bled into a doll. So you're like, now this doll is Annabelle?
Now this doll is Annabelle.
Right? You'd think that.
So here, I'm thinking, cool, we're going to get this doll running around.
But here's also the thing, is that we weren't, like, cool. For whatever reason, we went into this movie expecting the doll to be possessed by the spirit of a child who had been killed and was wronged and was now unleashing their childlike rage.
Yeah, I didn't know much about Annabelle.
You didn't even think that we were going to follow this couple the whole movie.
No, I thought that they were a flashback to here's how this main character gets the doll. They get it from this couple.
Yeah, and this is how preconceptions can definitely affect your enjoyment of a movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because we were expecting this damn doll to be possessed by a wronged child spirit.
A little girl.
And instead, at this point, we're like, oh, it's
a gross lady.
It's a gross cult lady who's in this doll.
Which isn't as fun to me.
Not nearly as fun, because I don't give a fuck about Annabelle Higgins. She joined a cult and killed her parents. Fuck her.
Yeah.
And then she's going to possess this doll.
But then we're like, the thing that also threw us is, so what the fuck is Annabelle Origins? Because we know for a fact that there's a human child playing Annabelle in that. So what the fuck?
I don't know, dude. I don't know.
Is it like young Annabelle that joins a cult?
I hope not. I always got the impression that that movie, the prequel to this prequel spinoff, Annabelle Creation, I always felt like that was like a period piece, like a 19th. I don't know. So when they're back at home, there's like a little scare with the rocking chair. This is like the first time that we get the idea that, oh, Annabelle might be possessed.
Is haunted.
Because she's at home. Mia's at home by herself. She's in another room. She hears the rocking chair creaking. And I got so mad at this. Because
this was a bummer.
She's in a room. I think she's sewing because she's using that sewing machine a lot. Yeah. She hears the rocking chair. And then they show a shot like tilting up from the ground of the rocking chair and showing Annabelle in this chair rocking. Then Mia comes down the hallway and in a well-constructed standard horror shot peers around the corner of the room, and the creaking stops right as she sees the chair, and the chair is still. Why have that shot of Annabelle in the chair? This is such a better, creepier thing if you just follow Mia and see what she's seeing.
You hear the noise.
You hear the noise. You see her like go down the hall. You see her peer into the room, and then the noise stops right as she sees a very still chair. Seeing the chair rocking with Annabelle, why include that shot?
Yeah. Yep. Agreed.
Then John's like gonna leave town for a few days, but he doesn't. Like the night before or something, he was gonna make popcorn.
He was gonna make popcorn.
But she fell asleep, so he just left the Jiffy Pop thing on the stovetop.
Yeah.
With the stove off.
Yeah.
Then I guess the next day he leaves to go out.
He leaves, and then Annabelle, I'm assuming, turns this all.
We never see it. Just we don't the stove's see it.
The
on.
Stove turns on.
Yeah, while Mia is in the room with the sewing machine. Is this when her finger gets all messed up? Yeah,
this upset me. So Mia is sewing at her sewing machine, which is in her room, and she's watching TV while she's sewing, and she has her finger so fucking close to where the needle is, which you don't do. There's no reason to have your fingers that close. And it's hard to, you can't just watch stuff while you're sewing. It's really hard.
Her eyes are glued to that TV while she is sewing. That's not going
to
be.
And so what happens is she gets her fingers too damn close to this needle, and the needle punctures her finger, and it's gross.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. And it's something
I think about while I'm sewing, but I've never come close to that happening. I think I've hit my nail once.
Yeah. And
meanwhile,
the Jiffy Pop is blowing the fuck up on the stove. I'm sorry. Didn't Scary Movie ruin being able to do this as a thing?
Yeah, where it gets gigantic.
It's gigantic and just like filling the house.
Yeah.
Tell me your name and I'll tell you mine.
I don't think so.
What's that noise?
Oops. I farted. I didn't think you would hear me.
No. That popping noise.
Oh, I'm making popcorn.
And even if it hadn't, Scream did this and played it straight. I mean, that's why Scary Movie riffed on it, because she had the Jiffy Pop on the stove and it ended up like smoking up the house. This movie takes so much from other movies, like such little things like that. They could have done anything else.
Yeah.
But no, they had Jiffy Pop on the stove, like Scream and Scary Movie. And it like starts a house fire or whatever, and she cuts her finger and then she faints. Oh no, there is the cool supernatural moment. Her first like brush with the supernatural, because she's trying to run out and she gets like dragged back down the hallway.
Oh yeah.
With like a big like vroom.
Yeah.
And that's right before like neighbors and shit run in.
The cops show up.
Yeah. To save her because her house is on fire. So like that's her first brush with like, ooh, something might be wrong here. And that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But it's still very small potatoes for the runtime that we've hit in this movie. Because I think
we kept checking to see how far we were in the movie. And we got very concerned because nothing was happening and we were pretty far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, also, before this happened, she had John throw out the Annabelle. She was
That's right. They trashed the Annabelle doll.
Yeah, because it was being held by the crazy
cult lady. It was a reminder of the that night. So
she winds up in the hospital again because of the smoke and the, I guess, the finger. Probably, that's not a determinant factor.
And
because
I'm
hospital.
Sure all the stress of that night induced labor.
It induced labor because John shows up there not having left town. So that wasn't a necessary thing to dangle.
Yeah.
He could have just gone out for milk or something. He shows up at the hospital and is like, I'm not leaving town anymore, baby. Also, we have a baby. Also, we don't have to go back to that house. We'll move.
But then also they move to Pasadena to get away from their haunted house. And Pasadena's haunted as fuck. It's the most occult city.
Yeah. Take like, Chelsea's
that's
word for
where
it.
Pasadena is where the occult movement in like the mid-century was happening. In
Ever
the
hear
United
of a little
States.
Man named Aleister Crowley?
Aleister Crowley. He had a little party house there.
Ever hear of a little guy named L. Ron Hubbard?
L. Ron Hubbard doing sex rituals in Pasadena. This is all true. I'm not bullshitting.
Yeah, we're not making
it's
shit
true,
up.
David Bowie
would have hung out.
Had an experience with like a demon in his pool or something.
That would have, when they exercised
the
pool.
They exercised his pool. Was that Pasadena?
I believe so, just because I feel like it was in the residence of Aleister Crowley, maybe. Regardless, it was during his
period. I would
period
have had
of...
such a good time in Pasadena in the 70s.
Yeah.
Or 60s.
That no, it was the 70s.
With Bowie?
Yeah.
Okay. Elron Hubbard during... would have been much earlier.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah. Well, see, that just goes to... It's
Pasadena
a testament to Pasadena.
It's where we want to live eventually. I love Pasadena.
Yeah. Not for cult
reasons.
It's
also beautiful.
It's fucking beautiful.
It's gorgeous, yeah.
But yeah, that was Bowie's cocaine and milk and red peppers
phase.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, they moved to extremely haunted Pasadena.
And the doll's back when they're unpacking. Oh, how do you have this,
this
very likable, intelligent character explain this?
Wait a sec. How did that get in there? I swear, I threw it out.
I don't know. Things must have got mixed up after the fire.
I'm sorry, what?
No, things must have gotten mixed up after the fire. I guess I'll keep it now, even though it was See, that's the thing, is these characters are extremely likable because of the actors. They are made to do dumb things sometimes for plot reasons.
Yeah.
And this is one of them, just keeping this fucking doll.
Yeah.
After it shows back up. And there's not even, they don't even bother to feign any confusion between the two of them. John walks in and is like, yo, I threw that doll away. So this is about halfway into the movie.
Yeah.
And all Annabelle has done is sit in a rocking chair and
make popcorn.
And make popcorn. Yeah. This is also around the time when we meet a very important character, apparently.
Okay. Here's the thing we have to talk about.
Oh, man, this sucks.
So Annabelle, and this, you know, going into watching Annabelle, talking about Annabelle, I did not expect to have to talk about the fact that there's a magical black person in this movie.
Yeah. What's the trope called? Magical Negro?
Magical Negro. But very often in movies, you'll have a singular black character who is basically there to either provide exposition or motivate the main character or characters to move forward on their journey. And they're always very wise, very
spiritual,
kind, spiritual. Yeah, they have some access to something that the main characters don't. Like, they have, yeah, some kind of spiritual connection. So I think the best example of this character is John Coffey from The Green Mile. And this is not to say you can't love that movie or these kinds of kids. Like, I love that movie. I cry every fucking time John Coffey says that he's afraid of the dark and doesn't want the bag on his head. As film watchers and as film reviewers, it's just stuff you gotta point out. Like, we'd be bad reviewers if we didn't point this out, because it's such a crazy, glaring example of this trope.
Yeah, and it's weird to have it in this movie that was made in 2014. Yeah, and to have it so poorly done.
It's very badly done.
Because, like I said, this character, Evelyn, played by Alfre Woodard,
who deserves Woodard so much better than this.
Yeah, this, so heads up, I'm not super familiar with her filmography as far as, like, I looked through it, and I'm not, like, a big fan of anything that she's been in, but it's a lot.
Yeah, she's an esteemed actress.
Yeah, she was in Hill Street Blues, which is, like, one of the most important television shows ever made.
Hill Street Blues, man, that's why TV drama is what it is now. R.I.P. Stephen Bochco.
Yeah, it was a forerunner to TV as art.
Yeah.
And she was in that. She's been in countless other things. Yep. As an activist, is like a very respected person.
And then in this movie, she plays a woman that the main characters meet halfway through. She pops out of a bookstore and is like, hello, I'm Evelyn. You moved in here. Here's my bookstore.
We'll meet up again in 20 minutes. Yeah.
And by the way, her bookstore, she seems to specialize in magical books about spirituality and occultism.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know?
Yeah. In their new building, is they live below these kids who she runs into on the stairs. It's a moment where there's some good baby acting. That baby fucking says hi to those kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm Mia, and this is Leah.
But when Mia gets back home later, she finds a picture that they were drawing, and it's her and Leah, the baby, in a carriage. And she's like, oh, look, they left us something. And then, like, they're going up the stairs, and there's more pictures, and, like, it's kind of moving. And then, like, the pictures start falling down onto the staircase of her. And it's cool. It's really cool because the pictures slowly build up to a drawing of a truck hitting the baby carriage and, like, wrecking this baby shit, and Mia all distraught. But the editing in this scene is super weird. And it's just another thing where it's like, cool idea, kind of not great execution. I don't know, man.
We finally do, around this point, get to see little girl Annabelle.
Oh, yeah.
So we see a little girl ghost, and this is when we start to get very confused, because we see a little figure run across the apartment, and we think it's maybe the doll running around, but it's a little girl in a white dress. And this, another very good scare.
This is my number one.
This is your number one? Well, you explain it then, because it's cool.
Because Mia looks up, and she sees through a couple of doorways in another room further off, this little girl ghost standing there. And it's a creepy image right there. I always love shots
of stuff far away in the background.
Me too.
Standing still.
Me too.
It's the scariest shit. I love it. So that's creepy on its own. Then the little girl starts running at her through these doorways while the door to the room that she's in is slowly closing. And when the little girl hits that closing door, it briefly masks her for a second. And when the door like flies open again, she's not a little girl. She's Annabelle Higgins now.
Yeah.
Awesome scare.
It's really cool.
Great scare. My number one.
Yep.
And she like tackles Mia. It was terrifying. It was great. Then I guess that ghost disappears. And guess what? It's not a ghost.
I still don't quite get
this is so...
what it is. Because we... Who do we even learn this from? The priest?
The priest. Who like... priest kind of opened the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they were in church. So it would have made more sense to have the priest do the shit that Evelyn did at the end.
Yeah, no kidding. Because then we wouldn't have a scenario of why is this character in this movie?
Yeah.
That's how you know a character is a trope or just like a badly written character and is there just for plot reasons. It's, you know, when you start asking, what is this person's deal?
Yeah.
Like, why are we spending time with them? I don't understand why they didn't just have
the priest
be the friend that helps them figure out what's going on.
Or have Evelyn early on. I mean, I get that she's in Pasadena where they don't live in the start, but do something. You can't have a character that important to the ending introduced halfway through the fucking movie and only briefly at that. And with both the priest and with Evelyn, we weren't sure, is something up with them? Are they going to end up being...
Yeah, both of them seemed weird.
They're just face value. It's a face value priest. It's a face value magical black lady.
Yeah.
That's all they are. So, yeah, they're talking to the priest because, hey, there's ghosts. And cool John, like, you know, he asks some questions. Are you sure that it's not a hallucination? I'm a doctor. There's science. But then he believes her.
Yeah.
Which is great. I'd like to believe I would do the same for you.
Yeah.
You know?
But then scientist doctor says, no, we're not going to go see a shrink. We're going to go see the priest.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's the 60s.
Can't
trust.
True.
Can't trust shrinks.
No.
It'll look bad.
So then there's a sequence where Mia takes the apartment elevator down to the storage unit, which is like this creepy basement area. And this baby carriage rolls out of one of the storage units. And isn't there... There's like a thing in it, right? There's like she hears a baby crying and there's a bloody blanket in it. And when she lifts up the blanket, there's not anything.
Yeah.
And she runs. She starts running towards the elevator. And when she looks back, there's this demon standing there.
Yeah.
It's super creepy.
It's pretty cool.
It's like a black fuzzy looking thing with horns.
Yeah.
And yellow eyes.
We see him up close later and it's not great. He looks kind of like Nightcrawler. There's also a shot where he winds up upside down in front of her in the foreground of the frame, but it's clearly like green screened and keyed and like just inserted in, which sucks. But this elevator sequence is really cool.
Yeah, so she runs back to the elevator, and when she gets in, she presses the door to go up. The door's shut, and then they just open again, and it's the basement again. And this happens a few times, and it's so good at building up dread, because every fucking time that elevator door opens, I'm positive that that thing is going to be standing there or like its hand is going to stop the door from closing. But it never does. It's just
the dark storage basement.
Yeah.
And then
so good.
Yeah. A few times she'll hit the button and the elevator will just not do anything. And then the door will open. And then the last time she hits the button and the elevator like moves up. But then the door opens and it's still there.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah, that sequence was good.
That's well done. She makes a run for it after realizing the elevator won't work. And she has to like run towards the demon and then veer off to go to the staircase. And then she's like running up the stairs. And again, this part looks real weird.
I think the frame rate was different. It looks like a weird soap opera.
It looks
It's really, really bizarre.
Weird.
I don't know what was going on.
It looks like a TV show.
Yeah.
It's not good. Yeah. I don't know why.
It's so weird. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It sucks. Like, if the audio version of this, you won't be able to see, so I'm not even going to bother splicing in the clip, but mm-hmm. it's so weird.
It looks bizarre.
By the way, there's a demon in this movie now.
Oh, yeah.
We should point that out.
Hey, does that demon, did we need that doll?
No.
I mean, in movie, the explanation
in
is,
movie?
Yeah
sure.
It.
We get an explanation soon.
Kind of.
But this is still at the point where we don't know why there's a doll in this movie, because now there's a demon.
Yeah.
And this is the scare I was talking about, where she gets to the top of the stairwell and looks around and the demon's just crouched on the stairs and it's kind of far away. It's really creepy.
Oh.
But that's also when it pops in front of the camera. And
yeah, that's when it pops in front of the camera.
Yeah,
just upside
so
down,
that's
which sucks.
Kind of, yeah.
She goes to the cop after this. She goes, sees that cop that they're talking to. He name drops Conjuring.
That's, yeah,
something
that's
about
right.
Conjuring up stuff. A little nod. But he just calls it a bunch of hocus pocus.
And this is the cop that's investigating the murder of their neighbors from the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, he's nothing.
So he knows all about Annabelle and what. So he comes over. Mia's like, I want you to tell me everything you know.
Yeah.
So,
and he mentions the Disciples of the Ram.
Disciples of the Ram. So this is when we learned that Annabelle was in a cult.
Yeah, good to learn that at this point an hour into the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And that they were a satanic cult and they were trying to conjure something.
Yeah. And she takes that crime scene picture of the symbol
it's so bizarre. Yeah, she takes a look and she sees the symbol in blood that Annabelle wrote on the wall before she died.
That's Annabelle Higgins, the cult daughter,
the
not
cult
Annabelle
daughter,
the
not
doll.
The doll. And she's looking at this picture. It's a crime scene photograph. And she goes,
then you won't mind if I keep this one for myself?
You can't do that.
Lady, that's evidence.
That's evidence, ma'am. We do mind very much.
Who tells them about how ghosts are specific places? Is that Evelyn?
I don't
or
remember.
Or is that the priest?
I think Evelyn. Nope.
It is Evelyn.
Evelyn?
Yeah.
Because, okay, so what happens is Mia goes to the bookstore that Evelyn owns. Mm-hmm. And Evelyn's like, oh, I have spooky books this way. Follow me. And so they pick out a bunch of books about the occult. And they bring them back to, I think, Evelyn's apartment. We learn all about occultism with them
and ghosts and demons
and why we need a fucking doll. We finally learn why we need a doll in this movie.
Because it's a conduit. It's not a ghost. One, ghosts are tied to specific places, which is a thing, right? That's standard ghost lore. That's fine. And obviously this spirit or whatever is not tied to a specific place because they moved.
Yeah.
Cool. But that means that it's not Annabelle Higgins's spirit in this doll. This is a demon. It is a separate thing.
But then why
is
Annabelle running around?
I don't know.
Is why the is demon Annabelle?
I guess the demon's impersonating Annabelle. Or maybe the demon just decided to hitch a ride on human Annabelle.
Yeah, now I'm confused. I thought I had this figured out. No.
None of us do.
So Annabelle bleeds into the doll.
Yeah. You know what? I'm starting to think that. Oh, I was going to say, is that a red herring? I don't know.
No, that's how because the symbol makes the magic happen.
Yeah, the symbol makes the magic.
So, I think it is kind of like her spirit.
But it's not. I think they specifically say it's not the spirit, it's a demon.
But then why is it Annabelle?
I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know.
Get it.
It's the doll, I don't think, is possessed by the spirit of Annabelle Higgins.
But I think it is. because at the end, when the two nurses are talking to Ed and Lorraine Warren, they say they took the doll to a medium, and the medium says this doll's possessed by the spirit of a girl named Annabelle Higgins. So what the fuck?
Then what? Then the spirit, the Annabelle Higgins possessed doll is just holding the door open for this demon?
That's what I interpreted it as.
Okay, I guess
it's like
in the afterlife,
Annabelle, the person, is basically holding a door open for a demon to come in.
So the So the big problem here is the demon.
Yeah.
The Annabelle doll possessed by Annabelle Higgins is kind of like a little toady. She's just a helper for the demon.
Yeah.
But the movie's named after her.
Yeah. So then why is the demon Belial? Is that who we're...
They mention Belial. Belial gets a shout out. Belial, for me, is Basket Case.
Yeah.
I can't wait to cover Basket Case on the
channel.
That'll
be fun.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like naming your movie Igor. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure once we post this, we will get so many people explaining it.
Please do.
And I know that people are going to think we're two dummies for not getting it. But you know what? Your movie should be less confusing.
The movie, yeah.
We should be able to figure this out through one sit through. It's so weird.
During this scene is also when they establish Evelyn as a proper character. You know, an hour into this movie.
Tragic backstory for Evelyn.
Yeah, of her daughter having passed away when she was about Mia's age because a car accident. Evelyn's to blame for. Because I guess she was sleepy behind the wheel.
She got distracted.
Something like that. And she or maybe she was drunk. I don't know. I don't think
she was drunk.
Well, she said something about how she shouldn't have been driving.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if it's spelled out more explicitly.
Yeah.
The car crash kills her daughter. She survives it. She tries to kill herself because this whole thing is kicked off when Mia notices
she has like a big scar on her arm.
Yeah. But then I guess right when she was about to die, she heard her daughter's voice saying, no, you got...
It's not time yet.
You got a purpose for this movie.
Yeah.
That you got to do in the end. So, cool. That's her.
Yep.
That should have happened. Act one.
Yeah.
This fucking scene. Mia goes home. She takes Leah out of the carriage, and the carriage falls back and gets hit by a truck, just like in those pictures.
Yeah.
I guess all this stuff is just the demon threatening Mia.
Yeah, and we learn that the demon wants a soul.
Yeah.
And it's going after the baby, because I guess baby souls are easier to
Or get. It's ostensibly going after the baby.
Yeah.
Later on, we find out it actually wants Mia's soul.
That's right.
And is just threatening Leah's soul. Mia and Leah, in order to get it.
That's right, because babies cannot offer their soul.
Yeah, you gotta offer
your soul. So the demon's trying to get Mia to basically go, okay, take me instead of my baby.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, we're good here, because it's an hour and... Well, we're not good, but I'm back on track here. It's an hour and 10 minutes in, and this is when Annabelle moves. It's
wow.
When she sits up.
Yay, she sits up.
And hovers.
What is it, an hour and 10 minutes in?
It's an hour and 9 minutes, to be exact.
Yeah,
she sits up in the background of a shot and then hovers.
Wow,
and Mia looks
amazing.
At her and screams, and that's it.
Well, the demon's behind Annabelle. The demon's holding it up.
Oh!
That's why I said it. The doll's not even fucking moving. It's just being lifted up.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
It's like Insidious style. It's like right behind it.
I see.
You know?
This fucking doll.
I know.
And then, yeah, Mia just screams and then we're off. We're done with that. She screams at what she sees. Because then they're talking to the priest who mentions the Warrens.
That's right. The priest comes over and he's like, you know, I have two friends who... are really into this. They're on the East Coast, wink wink, but they can help you. So then the priest volunteers to take the doll.
Yeah. Takes her, he goes to church. Chelsea literally exclaimed ew when the ghost Annabelle showed up.
Oh yeah.
She was like sitting in his car.
Well, because what it is the priest has Annabelle. One, he like puts her in the passenger seat, then he looks over and puts her in the back seat. Which
kind
I
of a child's play thing.
Very funny. Yeah.
Child's play too.
It is. So he drives to the church. He grabs the doll and he starts walking towards the church. And we get this panning shot.
Oh, but this is after the radio goes spooky.
Yeah. We get the, there's a panning shot from the top, like the church spire, down to where the priest's car is parked. And there's the ghost Annabelle lady sitting in the back seat. And yeah, I literally went, ew, because she's so gross. She looks like the dumpster man from Mulholland Drive.
Oh,
I think that's why I said ew.
Yeah. Oh, it was, and it was the priest who mentioned, hey, it's a conduit. The doll's a conduit. Oh, okay. Thanks, priest.
Thanks,
priest. Priest tries to get into the church. Then he gets, like, yanked away.
Dressed up like he's in The Exorcist, oh, by the way, again, with that hat. Again,
another thing. It's, like, blatant Exorcist priest.
It's, like, nighttime shot, street lamps. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Movie.
Right before he's entering, right before he enters the church, he gets yanked back and thrown on the ground. And then there's a shot of, like, his blood pooling out,
yeah,
and the doll lying there. And I'm like, okay, the priest is dead. Nah.
He's next scene, he's in the hospital. The doll gets taken by human ghost Annabelle.
That's right. Yeah, she takes the doll. Cool. Still, even when we see the nuns in the hospital, I think the priest is dead.
Yeah.
And but then John is just working there, and he sees, he like goes into the room and is like, oh, the priest. Shouldn't John be like, oh, that priest who just left my house with the doll who we thought was possessed.
He's in the hospital.
He's in the hospital now.
Where's the doll?
That, yeah. And then later when the priest wakes up, John's like talking to him like he just like, you know, this was a standard checkup in the hospital. He's, yeah, not like, hey, what happened to the doll?
Yeah.
That you left with before you wound up in the hospital.
Yeah. He's definitely not alarmed enough.
Yeah. So while John is dealing with the hospital bound priest, Evelyn's hanging out with Mia again.
Oh my gosh. And it's just more of,
there's more shit that should have been in act one. There's like a montage of them hanging out with the baby.
Yeah.
Oh, sweetie pie. Goodness gracious. Oh, mommy. Okay. You know what? My Ruby used to fuss and fuss until I rocked her. Put it down here. She used to fuss and fuss. Come on.
Yeah, there's like the baby's crying and Evelyn's like, oh, I'll go get her. And we're thinking Rosemary's Baby type thing where Evelyn's like,
yes, I thought that Evelyn was going to be a bad guy.
That would have been more fucking interesting, yeah, even though it would have been a blatant ripoff of Rosemary's Baby. But like, what else isn't? There's then spooky stuff happens because there's like the spooky priest, like spooky version of the priest.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, may God have mercy on your
he
soul.
He shows up at Mia's door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's not actual priest.
No, it's...
because he's still in the hospital.
Demon
priest.
What the fuck is going on?
I don't know, dude.
So then, yeah, maybe it's not Annabelle. Oh, no.
Don't get confused. I think you had it. This, when the priest wakes up in the hospital, he tells John, it can't be after the baby's soul. A baby can't offer its soul.
Yeah.
When he says that, then we cut to Evelyn being like, I'll go take care of the baby.
This one, I thought Evelyn was gonna do a Wishmaster Jin type thing where she tricks Mia into offering her the baby.
Or I thought something. That just Evelyn was gonna be down with Satan and be the person who offers the baby soul to him.
Right. And the reason she had a scar on her arm earlier is because she's part of the cult or something
like that.
No.
I guess Mia is gonna get freaked out because there's a doll bloodbath in her doll room.
Yeah.
All these dolls are fucked up. Then Nightcrawler's back. The Nightcrawler demon, he hops down from the ceiling. There's this kind of silly Hitchcockian shot of her screaming at Annabelle. It's like the foreground of the shot is Annabelle's huge ass face. And then Mia's in the background.
What do you want from me? What do you want from me?
And then they answer with like, on the window, written in very neat,
yeah,
lettering, your soul in blood on like,
yeah,
your on one window pane, soul on the other. And then it opens.
Dude, don't forget, though, that,
yeah,
when Mia goes into her bloodbath nursery,
uh-huh,
and her baby, she can't find her baby. And I know this.
Oh.
So then I think she sees Annabelle in the crib. And she grabs Annabelle, the doll, and just starts wailing on this doll, like hitting this doll's head on the crib and throwing it around. And then we see...
she like throws her away.
She throws it. And then we kind of look to where, around where she threw it. And Leah's laying there, the little baby.
Yeah.
And we thought for a second that this movie was going to fucking go there and just kill a baby. We thought that it was a thing where she thought she was hitting Annabelle and throwing her around, but she accidentally killed her baby.
Yeah.
But no, that's not the case. Leo's fine. But still, though, that moment was...
that was insane.
Yes, it was. We both...
because, like, she goes over and cradles this baby.
Yeah, and it's...
and for, like, a minute.
Very limp. very limp baby. And we were both just like, oh my God, this movie actually went there. But it didn't.
Yeah, then it turns back into a doll, a different doll.
Oh, that's
doll.
Right. Then, like, the baby that she thinks is Leah, it starts laughing. It's and then she a, looks yeah, at it. It's a weird baby doll. I don't know where the actual baby is at this point.
I'm glad they didn't do that.
It would have been a very weird tonal thing to just kill a baby.
Like, and especially the way she was beating that doll
it would have
the
been,
crib.
It would have been a little too much.
Yeah.
But
it was insane. So I guess good fake out.
Good,
since, like,
yeah, because
it made us
was
aghast
genuinely shocking
without actually doing it.
Yeah.
So I guess that's good.
Yeah.
That was a terrifying moment.
Yeah, it was.
But it's not her baby. I guess that's the last straw. Yeah, because her baby's just missing
somewhere. I don't know. I don't understand where.
Oh, and before all this, Evelyn got knocked out, just like tossed aside and knocked out.
Yeah.
So she can come back
here. John gets home from the hospital.
Yeah, because the window's open.
That's
where it says,
we want it, your soul.
Yeah, your soul windows open up. And then, as if that wasn't enough, there's like this constant whispering of, your soul.
Yeah.
Okay, we
cool.
get it, demon.
Yeah. So then Mia gets up on the windowsill and is going to jump.
She has Annabelle in her hands, I think.
She's holding Annabelle, yeah.
So she's going to jump and like give
the
her soul to
Annabelle.
Satan. Yeah, the doll Annabelle, not a cult
not
lady Annabelle Higgins.
Or child Annabelle.
Then
John gets home from the hospital. He unlocks the door. So him and Evelyn both run back inside.
Because now she's recovered just in time for this ending.
Yeah.
Because we need her for this ending.
Jesus, this ending.
And yeah, because Mia's going to jump out the window to give her soul to Satan to save the baby.
Yeah.
But no, John talks her down.
Well,
and
no,
so does
John
Evelyn.
Grabs her. He doesn't even talk her down. He's like, no, he grabs her and
pulls
her back.
And Evelyn, they both
and
try
then,
to talk
so,
her down.
Yeah,
Evelyn's
so they
like,
talk
your
her
daughter
down.
Needs a mom.
Yeah, so then John grabs Mia and is like, no, I don't even remember what he says because all I can think about now is
he's like, we'll figure it out. We'll find a way.
Yeah, okay.
There's got to be another way. Then you hear
there is another way. And who's standing in the window? It's Evelyn.
It's Evelyn.
Character we met 20 minutes ago.
No, we met her about 40 minutes ago in a brief shot in church. And then like, yeah, we got to know her about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, so character that, you know, we can't even tell if they're supposed to be a good guy or bad guy or not. Now Evelyn is standing in the window holding Annabelle. And she jumps.
She jumps. This is why I'm alive.
This is why my daughter told me it wasn't my time yet. It's so I could sacrifice myself to save these people I just met.
Yeah, these white people I just
met. Yeah. Bye. And then she jumps. And that's it for Evelyn.
Honestly, that ending and that character's role in the ending is what single-handedly changes this movie from like inoffensively bad to pretty terrible.
Yeah. I think the way that character dies and what happens to her is what sealed for me that this is like a pretty bad take on like the magical black person thing.
Yeah,
because that character literally exists just to give information to the main characters and then give her life to save them.
I would love to get a screen time count of how much that character is on screen.
Yeah, it's not a lot. She's on screen for, hi, I'm Evelyn. Hi, here's my tragic backstory so that you feel something when I kill myself at the end.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill myself now. That's that character. Oh, and then here, I own this bookstore. Here's exposition in this aisle down here, aisle 4.
All right, Annabelle, there's nothing more to say about this fucking movie. Oh, social media stuff, like and subscribe the podcast, rate it on iTunes, write reviews, that's all great. So check it out. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.